This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Beginning with the first day of the convention, and we are going to be registering here very shortly. We are at the hosting hotel, of course, after last night, spending a wonderful evening at Esther's Follies, after an even more glorious day at the unveiling of the Houdini sign. And if you listen to the prelude on the Magic Word podcast, you can hear all that went on and see some of the pictures on the website, which I highly recommend you do. And also had a nice little conversation with Mike Amar afterwards and also Ray Anderson. Anyhow, go back and listen to that, but now we're going to be talking to the person who is the guest of honor this year. Each year we focus on someone of great importance and a legendary status within our organization, and this year it is Mary Kay Gold. Hello, Mary Kay. Congratulations.
Well, thank you so much, Scott. I was very surprised when they let me know they were giving this honor to me. Yeah. That I guess all you have to do is show up and work really hard every year.
Yeah, just not putting in the time. And you're doing just a lot of work behind the scenes, because often people will say, well, who is the organization? Well, the organization backbone is the person who is there all the time. Presidents come and go. Myself and Bob and several others who are around here right now have been past presidents, but it's the person who is in charge really of secretarial duties, treasury, and everything. So.
Yes, and that's what I do behind the scenes, is make sure that we still have structure and things get passed fairly consistently from president to president, although each of the local groups and clubs have their own flavor of a convention. We still have some definite things that have to be taken care of every year, so I try to make sure those things are taken care of every year.
And how many years have you been in this position?
I was trying to remember that.
I've asked this several times. We better get it right and be consistent.
I believe I'm going on 20. Yes.
But really, if we go back further, when you were working with Judy Hollingsworth, or Judy Scott Donaldson way back, when she was before Fred Scott Donaldson in the past, that you were helping her, and then she kind of coerced you to come into position? Or?
She did. Judy is a master of luring me into things. If we were teenagers, my mother would be saying, don't hang out with that girl.
That's funny.
But even in the local ring and local SAM, I took over the newsletter from Judy. I took over secretarial duties from her there. And so I just kind of kept following that whole track into TAOM. So.
Yeah, you guys always seem to be like sisters. I mean, just everything that you did, and were around each other. So what one didn't do, the other one finished, you know.
Right. And I didn't even include the Austin Magic Auction that we've done fairly consistently for, gosh, since before I was involved in magic in Austin. Yes, a long, long time.
Yeah.
So
I want to ask about the TAOM in general, about how the TAOM differs from other organizations, because there are other hosting organizations. I know the Florida State Magicians, there's the PCAM, Pacific Coast, and MEAS, and Mid-Eastern Alliance in New York, and anyhow, our Eastern States. The point is, what is it that differentiates us from just another organization that hosts a magic convention?
I think one of the things that kind of make us unique is that Texas, of course, is such a very large state that it's a single state with unifying a lot of the clubs throughout the state. Some are IBM, some are SAM, but at the same time, some are in the same city, some are in different cities. We have a few member clubs in TAOM who are smaller and host the convention only occasionally. But then we have some larger clubs that love putting on the convention, and they do it more often, perhaps.
Right. It seems there is a core, you know, the Dallas-Fort Worth, Houston, Austin, kind of the four main groups. But then, yeah, outside there, we've had the outliers of Abilene, Tyler, and Lubbock, and Corpus Christi.
Right. And you know, the smaller outlying clubs kind of, they grow larger, and then they kind of wane again. So as they wax and wane, you know, they do different things. But we try to keep everybody involved. And so we do the same thing in some of the activities we have during TAOM, of trying to make sure we have people statewide involved, that it's not always the same group with hands-on.
Now, as far as the numbering of the conventions, I think, if I've done this right, this is like the 74th-ish, I think, because I believe, I remember when David Hira was president, he was claiming that was the 50th, and that was in 97, so that would make this about the 74th, I believe.
I will take the fifth on that. Please talk to Bruce Chadwick, our historian. Last year was one of the many 75th anniversaries.
Okay. One of our many. And then, but really, as far as the organization goes, the organization was around before we had the convention, or was the organization formed as a result of the convention? Which came first, I guess, the chicken or egg, the convention or the organization? With what was the name that started it?
Herman Yeager.
Yeager, yeah, thank you.
Herman Yeager started with the picnics in Austin, and from there it got a little bigger. They actually did not incorporate until toward the 60s and 70s, long in there, but it started formalizing itself during that time where it became a cohesive unit.
Right. And one of the things I think is interesting as well is how we have people who will money or some of their estate to the organization for, and what is that used for?
Well, we have a couple different bequests that we have. We have two bequests from past presidents that part of the interest goes to the upcoming convention every year, so that they have a little what we call seed money, because it's not cheap to put on a convention if anybody's been involved in that type of thing. Because you need to put payments down and get things started, and before you start getting registrations, that's the only money you have. So we have that money. We also have a couple of bequests that go to giving some cash awards to junior magicians who win their contest. One is a flat award to the winner. The other one actually was set up where, depending how well they score, they could win more or less money. I keep hoping that we'll have somebody that in the goodness of their heart might give us a bequest for the senior magicians, for the adult magicians, to also continuously fund an award like that. But we have not had somebody step up to do that yet.
It's a 501c3, is that right? So it is a...
It's a 501c6.
What's the differential? I know you're not an attorney, but just
And I don't play one on TV either, so there are some slight differences. So I'm sorry, I can't tell you the difference there.
Yeah. Talk to your estate planner if you're thinking about doing it.
And it doesn't have to be an estate type thing. We have people who have just generously given us a contribution, and they can direct us to do it however they want. Some of them are put into investments and we use the interest. Some of them were just a chunk and we use them till they're gone. We actually have one gentleman who was on the board for a long time who left us a nice bequest because he wanted to make sure if we had a mid-year meeting, we would always have something to snack on and coffee and tea. And it's like, thank you, Bob.
Yeah, that was very nice. Yes, appreciate that. Everyone has a little bit different kind of a thing, what they want to leave behind or something. And so, that is something I think that differentiates the TAOM, I think, from some others. And we have a little bit of money in the bank like that. And about how many members approximately do we have currently?
Currently, we are about at the 300 mark. We've had, in my 20 years, we've had larger numbers because, and it's interesting how our membership has changed, because initially it was anybody who came to the TAOM, part of their registration was a membership. Well, it got very sticky because people would bring their other half, and they would bring their kids, and they would bring their partners, and these people would say, but I've gone every year for 30 years. And it's like, you've not been registered.
Yeah.
Only the magician was registered. So we changed that about 5-6 years ago, where everybody who attends and has a registration actually becomes a dues-paying member.
Including the children, or the youth, or the family?
Yes. Okay. And we actually have a couple people who brought their grandchildren when they were quite young, so they are going to get their 25-year award when they're maybe 26.
Wow.
If they keep the dues up. And yeah. Some grandparents are good at that. Some not so much.
Is one other thing, when people do leave, do they lose that? They have to start all over again? I know, like with the IBM, if you've laid out for a few years, you have to start over.
Well, and what we have is kind of a loose rule of thumb that if they lay out a couple years, we would let them bridge that time up. But there's a limit on how much you can bridge. Thanks to your endeavors, we actually now have a very active Order of Willard, where we actually have... do what?
I explain what that is.
Oh, okay. You can explain that.
Well, the Order of Willard, first of all, that Willard the Wizard is someone who was an old tent show magician from around Texas, known in Texas. In fact, his daughter... Frances Willard is with us and going to be performing the Spirit Cabinet then with her grandson, our son-in-law. Actually, it is her son-in-law. That's right. Yeah, Mike Lamar, who's here. Anyhow, Order of Willard has to be 25 years of consecutive membership within the TAOM of dues paying. And then every, is it 5 or 10 years, you get additional kind of medal?
We have an additional member medal for 35 years, and then one also for 50 years. And at 50 years, we also have another...
kind of trophy kind of a thing?
Well, they get a medallion and also a plaque. Yes.
An award
plaque, yeah. Awards. Which I think is important. This was something that I had noticed, of course, the Order of Merlin that the IBM had been giving people. And certainly we should be recognizing members who have had that continuity and have been supporting the TAOM. It doesn't matter if a blue dog shows up for the talent. I mean, there a lot of us are just here to see friends year after year after year. And it's the only time, and some people, this is the only convention, magic convention, they'll attend. So anyhow, just in recognition of that, I think it was important to have those members honored.
And that kind of plays into the theme they have this year of, you know, old friends, you know, come in and catch up with everybody. So.
Well, it's good to see you, old friend, or good friend. I don't want to call anybody old. A friend for a long time.
There you go.
So that was Mary Kay Gold, and this is Scotty out. And so while we are here at breakfast, I think it's an opportune time that we also happen to corner the president, because I know how busy a president can be and running in so many different directions and rarely getting a chance even to eat, because he is and she is making sure that all the fine details that are behind the scenes that registrants don't see nor appreciate gets handled. And so I want to thank you, Bertil Fredstrom, for doing a good job and being our president this year. And here he is, Bertil.
Thank you so much, and you're right. We actually don't start until lunch today, Friday, but we already had an event last night at Astor's Follies that you already know about, and then now, in 30 minutes, we're going to have a collector's meeting, which is also not part of the convention, but if you're at the convention, you can participate.
Right.
And that meeting is actually, the second part of it, open to anyone.
We mentioned that there yesterday, and so that was posted this morning, and so with the Zoom link at the website, so people, if you missed that, is that going to be recorded, do you know?
I don't expect so, no.
No, I think it was a one-time thing. You attend or you miss it.
It's not part of the convention. It's not part of the virtual convention registration. It's a one-off, and you actually helped us broadcast it to the world. We were only supposed to have the people in the room participate, and now anybody can.
We could have up to about 100 people attend this thing. It could be very widely attended. Speaking of virtual, I want to kind of ask you some questions about some other, because other organizers of magic conventions might be interested in, about how you have gone about in accomplishing this and how this virtual convention addition to the live convention works, and whether that could be something that could supplement future conventions for other locations around the world. So don't talk a little bit about the virtual convention, the component.
Yeah, so of course the previous TOM 2020 was canceled and replaced by a virtual convention, and it was kind of ad hoc. So we had some shows, and we discussed whether we could do a live or a virtual already in September of last year when we started planning this. So we always had virtual as an option. And 2 months ago, we decided that, yep, we need to do this. So thanks to Mark Wilson. We have to have a good techie to do this. He set it all up. He's hosting it. It's not a TOM event. TOM is actually buying that services from him.
Oh, interesting. So it's a contracted event. It's not part of
it. Yeah. And that frees us to do our event. And he is the guy making sure that he can cover it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's a different way of approaching it. So this way that you have no skin in the game of whether that makes or loses. It's all based upon what he thinks he's going to be able to do. But you help promote it, obviously.
Exactly. We help promote it, and we have to make him recover his costs, of course.
Of course.
And then there is a point when he is making break-even that we actually get a little kickback.
And as I understand the cost on that, he's going to be charging, I think it's $20 per event, and there are five different events, which include, I think there are three late-night, midnight bazaar events, there are two gala shows. But if you buy the whole package for $100, you will also be getting
all the lectures and the competitions.
Right, which you normally wouldn't get. That's not a per thing. That's only going to be for those who have paid for the whole package.
Yep, exactly.
So those who are listening to this and you didn't buy Friday night's package, you can still buy the package for it. Don't feel as if that you're getting cheated by only getting $80 worth if you pay $100. In other words, you're only going to get the four next shows. You get the, two shows, I guess, actually. You'd miss the gala show tonight, Friday, as well as the midnight thing. But when you hear this podcast being broadcast, there will be three more events. You can have a cost or pay per view. But if you buy the whole $100 ticket for the rest of the weekend, you do get the lectures and other events, the content.
May I ask you, when is this going to be broadcasted?
This will go out probably after midnight tonight. So if people are coming tomorrow, they're listening to this like all over the world or wherever, you know, they could come on Saturday to register.
Okay, but that makes me a little sad because they're going to miss out on the fun stuff on Friday.
So what's happening?
I was going to give you a scoop, but if it's too late, then you might as well have the surprise. Because nobody knows what's going to happen Friday yet.
Okay.
It's a very well-kept secret. But I was going to give you the scoop if you wouldn't broadcast today so they can buy those tickets.
It is going to be broadcast later today, but you can't buy your tickets for tonight. I mean, in other words, this will be broadcast after that.
Exactly, and that's why I don't need to.
Well, now you've whetted my appetite. What's the surprise that no one...
I can't tell you if it's not going to sell any tickets, but we think that if you know, you will be interested in buying those tickets because it's going to be an amazing, amazing event.
Who is the one who replaced Nick Nefat?
That's the thing, yeah. Yeah, that's the question. Who is the one?
And that was what you had on Facebook, is a mystery guest, you know, yes. Making guesses of the wildest. Who do you think?
Exactly, exactly.
What were some of the guesses they had over there?
Well, I think the wildest that I heard was Houdini. but he would be a silent guest.
Yeah.
We haven't given out that prize yet, so there is still time to put in some wild guesses.
Yeah.
But I'm going to keep it a secret, unless you broadcast something today before the show.
We shall see. We shall see. So as I start to close out with you over here, what is one of your biggest challenges to putting this thing together that you have a little trepidation about making?
I shouldn't say this because everything or anything can still go wrong. But I have such an amazing team here in Austin, and I trust them 100%. So I don't think anything can go wrong. I even expect to be able to sleep. Which all the other presidents before me says, no, you will not.
Whenever that you put together an organization and, you know, you're confident that it's going to be happening, I mean, if you do things at the last minute, you're going to worry. But, in other words, the train's coming and you've got everybody boarded and, you know, you're not going to be run over by it. You're actually going to be steering the train.
You know? Yeah, and you've been part of the planning process. So, you know, we had meetings, lots of meetings. And the committees have been working each on their own tasks and just reporting, and we discuss problems and we solve the problems and we keep on going.
And how many dealers do we have?
We have we had 8 dealers registered, but to my knowledge 2 of them has cancelled and 1 of them because of COVID.
Okay. And there were some last minute cancellations to registrations, so we're at around 200-ish.
We have 220 for the banquet.
Okay.
So that's, I guess, but we still have registration. We had registrations come in yesterday for the live event. So what happened?
What are you capping out? Are you capping out at 300? I mean, if we have a big rush at the last minute, I mean.
Yeah, no, we decided to cap out at 200 paid registrants. So the 220, that's part of the crew too.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, so
you're maxed out now.
Yeah, we're basically maxed out, but if you want to buy a ticket tomorrow, you can.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you do have individual tickets available if people want to come and see the gala show who are part of the public?
We have individual tickets for all the shows, those five shows that you already mentioned. And, of course, you can get those tickets virtually too. But we would like to have you here for the whole convention,
sure.
so register for the whole thing instead.
Yeah. Yeah, just because you are questioning if you've already registered and think, well, I'm just going to stay home and watch this on the virtual, you can, but you still don't get this kind of experience like Bertil and I are having sitting across the table, you know, right now, and the familiarity of friends.
And you also don't get the posters that we're producing specifically.
So
the posters are three posters from the Harry Ransom Center, and it's from the Houdini collection, so they used to belong to Houdini. Two of them are unique because not even Houdini ever printed them. They're two proofs of his Vanishing Elephant from 1919 at the Hippodrome. And he received those proofs, the watercolors, and he never printed, he never printed the actual posters. But now you can get the proofs printed.
Wow.
And the second one...
Every registrant gets one.
Everybody gets each of those two proofs, yeah. And the second one is a Herman poster from 1890, where he is performing the levitation, and he's... you read about it in the program, and
yep.
The program is also virtual, so you can find the program and look through it.
That is a PDF program that
yes.
you can download, which I think is an awesome thing. It's the first time we've done this. Is that
yes.
right?
Yes, I think so. I don't know.
This is a convention of firsts. I mean, with that, I think also with the way that we're going to be doing this virtual thing, it's going to be completely different than any other virtual convention you've been. There will be a camera that's in the main room, plus a strolling camera about as well. There are multiple camera shoots.
Yeah, we have four cameras in the main room, so... Even the acts have asked to get copies of the recordings afterwards, because these recordings will be professional quality recordings that they can use for their own purposes afterwards.
And so where can they get the information for that, for the virtual shows? Is that still on TOM.org website?
Yeah. The first page. Yeah.
Okay. So if you don't have to be on Facebook or anything, some people aren't, but if you are, there are several places there that you can find and click on that sign up for the virtual. But again, if you are not on Facebook, you can always just go to
TOM2021.com even.
What is it?
TOM2021.com.
Okay.
Yeah, you can go through the org also if you want to, but .com is easy to remember. Yeah.
Bertil, good luck, congratulations, and we'll talk to you on the back end, hopefully, to kind of see how rap was and see if this has met your expectations.
Thank you. I wish you'd said break a leg, but...
No, break a thread. That was Bertil Fredstrom, president of the 2021 Texas Association of Magician Convention here in Austin, Texas. This is Scotty out. So this evening we are in the dealer's room getting ready here before the gala evening show on the first official day on Friday. Today's the 3rd of September, and I'm here with one of the past presidents of the Texas Association of Magicians, also someone who was featured today as a lecturer, Mr. Kent Cummins. Hello, Kent.
Hello, Scott.
So good to have you here. Thanks also, some people who were listening to this podcast earlier heard your voice then also when you were talking about Houdini in Texas when we had the
right.
reveal of the thing. And so that was really a fun thing there yesterday, wasn't it?
Oh, it was a fantastic event.
Yeah.
I've been impressed with Trixie since before she was born.
Well, Wait a minute now.
I knew her parents.
Of course.
I knew her parents, and they were great people.
Yeah.
Still, you know, but... No, I told Trixie, I said, I like the fact that you can make things happen. And that was such a great event.
It was. Aside from being hot, you really didn't think about it because she provided for umbrellas and water and everything, you know,
keeping
everybody in mind about the situation out there for about a half hour. So it was great.
Yeah, it really was.
Tell me about your lecture. Now, I want people who weren't here and experiencing this. You were talking, the name of it was called
Marketing Magic Live. Because I write the Marketing Magic column for the Linking Ring. I've been writing for a little over 6 years. And it occurred to me, I'm going to be giving the stuff that I write about in Linking Ring live in a lecture. It's not the first time I've lectured Marketing Magic, but it's the first time I've called it Marketing Magic Live. And It's the first time I've been able to do it since the combined convention in Louisville. That was the last time I gave this particular lecture. And, of course, it changes all the time because what we learn changes all the time. But it's basically, how do you get better known as a magician? How do you book more shows if you want to? How do you make more money if you want to? But if you don't want to, then still, how do you get better known? How do you get out there? The basic marketing stuff.
I was wanting to hear more of the lectures today, but I was able to listen to yours because, first of all, I wanted to hear it. We had the TAOM board meeting, and so I didn't get to hear Cody's lecture.
He'll be doing it tomorrow.
He's going to do it again tomorrow?
Yes.
Oh, okay, good. I want to echo what you were saying in the lecture, and that is of having goals, because without goals, you're not going to go anywhere. And that's what I've always been preaching in my lectures and also on the podcast. It's important. I mean, if you don't have goals, that's fine, but just realize at some point in your life, you're going to realize, why wasn't I or am I not where I need to be? Well, it's because you didn't have goals. And so, you know, if you don't know where you're going to go, then you're probably going to get there.
That's exactly right. And I suspect I talk about goals too much because I mention them in almost every column.
Yeah.
But it is so important.
Yeah.
And that was the starting point. The starting point is goals. And the closing point was relationships. Ultimately, you need to decide what you want to do and build meaningful relationships. And it's not about who can I get to know so that all of a sudden, I can get all kinds of cool stuff. No, it's about how can I use what I know in ways that will genuinely help people. And when you help somebody, it makes you feel good.
Right.
But what also happens is that somehow the universe conspires to reward you for that. And I don't know exactly how or why that works. It depends on your religious beliefs, I suppose.
Well, part of it is you have to ask for it, which is something I think that you had said, and that's been my philosophy of life. You know, if you're going to ask out the prom queen, what's she going to say? But no, you should always ask for whatever, and they let them answer on their side.
That's exactly right. That's when I was talking about the how you find sponsors.
Yeah.
And some of the sponsorships fell into my lap because I was in the right place at the right time. People knew who I was. But when I was in high school, I got sponsorship for my shows from Pepsi Cola. Now, how would a high school kid get that? The high school kid makes up a publicity album, goes to the head of Pepsi Cola and asks for it. Mm-hmm. And they sponsored my shows for several years.
Yeah. Very important points that you're making, certainly every month in the column as well as your lecture then as well. And it is important, I think, you know, to ask for something because you're not going to get it unless you ask for it. And relationships are important. And that's the thing about going back and repeat business. After you've formed a good relationship or you've had a good experience with a company hiring you, ask them again next year. Have you got other events or something that you can help me with?
Exactly right. And the thing that makes my marketing lecture a little different from anybody else's is the self-eating watermelon. And that would take a very long time to explain in this particular podcast.
Yeah.
But read about it in my column in Linking Ring or look it up or, you know, find me somewhere online and ask me what the heck it is. It's something I've been doing since I was in college, and I graduated from LSU in 1965. So literally, I have been using the self-eating watermelon concept.
Great philosophy.
In order to make a living as a magician, and it's a process I've been using longer than I've been married, and Margo and I have celebrated 56 years of marriage.
Congratulations. And over 50 years of marriage.
Oh, over 70 years.
70 years. That's what it was. Yeah. Okay, we're going to close over here then, too. But if people want to contact you, by the way, to find about your lecture notes or about also the self-eating watermelon or philosophies, where can they get hold of you?
The easiest way is kent@kentcummins.com.
C-U-M-M-I-N-S.
Correct. Yeah. There's no G in there. It's not Cummings. It's kentcummins.com. And email is great because I can then point you to anywhere, whatever your interest is. Of course, I get a lot of emails from readers of the Linking Ring.
Yeah, you are so supportive and helpful to the young people and to anyone, really, who is interested in magic, legitimately have an interest. You've done a lot for the community. I appreciate you as a friend. You're just a great guy, and thank you on behalf of all the magicians and so many people who have become better magicians as a result of what you have done and pointed the directions you pointed. So thank you.
Thank you, Scott, and I appreciate how well you communicate what's happening in the world of magic. Obviously, I absolutely love it and have since December 25th, 1949.
Very good. Thanks a lot. So with the Magic Word Podcast, that was Kent Cummins. Scotty out. So we just finished the first evening gala show, and Nick DePot was not able to be here this evening. In his stead, we had Brian Brushwood and Justin Robert Young, who had filled in, and what they did was to talk about horror stories that magicians wanted to share. So everyone lined up behind the microphone, and we had about a dozen people tell some funny, rather amusing stories about things that have happened in their life.
All true.
And all true stories, exactly right. But some of the things we're going to be hearing later this evening are not true, but you will wonder if they are because they might chill you to the bone. That'll be the bizarre night we're going to be having, hosted
right.
by Saul Ravencraft, my guest right now. Hello, Saul.
Hi there. Hi there, Scott. How are you?
Fantastic. Looking forward to this evening. And you're going to be hosting not only tonight, but for the next two consecutive nights as well.
That's right.
Tell me something about what people can expect for the shows.
Well, the whole point of TAOM After Dark is to give people a chance to get into the shadowy spaces, the weird spaces, the kind of magic that doesn't necessarily involve card tricks and balloon animals. And I've got some wonderful folks coming in that are going to show things in their full context. A lot of times shows like this end up being variety performer shows, and a performer only gets a chance to do 10 minutes or so, and you don't really get to see very much of them. You don't get to learn much about
right.
them. And the whole point of this is to get a chance to get a little deeper into the context. So on the first night, tonight, we've got Bizarro coming in from Las Vegas. He's going to start taking us down the rabbit hole gently, but it's going to get weird. Tomorrow night, Saturday, Paul Prater is coming in, master storyteller. He's going to take us into some lore and take us even deeper. And then it gets really weird on Sunday, because that's when Vince Wilson has come all the way from Baltimore to show us a stage seance.
From Poe's Theater. They'd call him Poe's Theater.
Right, yeah. Poe's Theater in the Baltimore area. And I'm really excited about what we're doing. It's going to go in a different direction, give some slightly different flavors. It'll be great to stay up late with TAOM After Dark.
It will be. Now, let me also encourage people who are going to be watching this virtually, or if you want to come, it's not too late to attend and sign up for the next few days for the live convention. But as far as the virtual goes, to learn more about these guys, I suggest you go back and listen to some of the episodes we had from the previous episodes of the Magic Word podcast, because I did have Carissa Hendricks, who had spoken. I have not had an extensive conversation with Bizarro yet, but that's coming. I had one then with Paul Prater when he was in town in Houston some time ago. I spoke with him, and then also with Vince Wilson this last year, and of course with Saul Ravencraft. And yours was great then too. So my point is, you can learn more about these ladies and gentlemen and kind of their past and their and so by listening to them a little bit in depth, so you know what to expect if you're going to be starting to view this virtually or you're going to be coming and attending live. But let me ask how this has now actually developed. How did we get to having the late night dark theater?
Well, it all started with Ed Solomon out of San Antonio. Those of you that know that history, Ed Solomon was a force in bizarre magic. He was a subtle force.
Yeah.
He inspired people. He informed people. He was very much about teaching people how to be storytellers and teaching people how to reach below the surface in what they were doing. And I had the privilege of knowing him in San Antonio up to the point of his passing. And he transformed me. He inspired me. He gave me a permission that no one had ever done, to embrace that weirder side of things. And we've had bizarre gatherings in the past. They've usually been variety show, open mic kinds of things. But after Ed passed, the San Antonio folks asked me to host a show. And it was a variety show, but it wasn't an open mic. We really took some people who knew and loved Ed and had them perform. And then this time, Bertel, our president, came to me and asked if I'd be willing to do a series of late shows. And not just one, but a series of them, so we could bring in performers and create a unique experience for people. And hopefully some people will gather a taste for it, and this will become a new TAOM tradition?
One of the traditions is, of course, I think the way this was begun was with Roger Clouse's Midnight Madness, in which he would have a bunch of his friends saying, hey, Scott, or you know, whoever, I want you to do a little bit of this or that. Can you do this card trick or whatever? Mm-hmm. And then after his passing, then Danny Garcia and a couple other people had taken over of that. And then after that, Jamie Salinas started doing some Midnight Madness things with a mentalism twist.
Right.
And so we had people, again, kind of like, who wants to do something? A mentalism show. So it was a Midnight Mentalism show. And then, as you said, in San Antonio, you actually had some other people who specialize in the macabre, in the bizarre kind of art, and brought them in, and that's taken us yet in a different direction still, and it's great, I think.
Well, and as you and I talked about on the podcast, to me, the whole bizarre movement is about that immersive experience.
Yes. Yeah.
Not winking and you know, being sly with the audience. We're gonna treat it like we're doing Hamlet. We're going to treat it like we're making a movie. We're going to go all in and see how far people are willing to go. And there's a lot of wonderful theater that's available. And the people listening don't get to see the stage that we set up in there, but Ken Dickensheets has set up an incredible theatrical space. And our performers are making good use of the lighting and the sound and the space. So this is not just going to be who's next sort of a performance.
Right.
You're really going to go into their world. And I'm actually not performing as you might think of it. I see my role more as Rod Serling for this. And I'm going to try and invite you into these shadowy spaces and make you ready to open yourself for the experience. I hope that just for a few moments, maybe even up to an hour if you can stand it, that you forget about the dealer's room. You forget about the gimmicks in your pocket. You forget about all that you know, and you're willing to enjoy the ride.
Love it. Yeah. I'm looking forward to this so much.
Me too.
You're going to do a great job, Saul. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Scott.
And I do want to encourage people to go back and listen. This is one of my favorite episodes because the way that you opened up, and it had so much more deeper meaning for people, everyone. I just would highly recommend, please, please, please go back and listen to this episode with Saul Ravencraft. It was just only about a month or two ago, I think, I released this. So please go back and check that out. And so, again, thank you very much and looking forward to tonight and the next subsequent nights.
Thank you for being the eyes and ears of TAOM. Next time you folks need to come join us.
Not just virtually, but come here live.
Absolutely.
Or tonight, dead. For the Magic Word Podcast. That was Saul Ravencraft. Scotty out. So as we're waiting for soon the next event, which is going to be Michael Lamar's lecture, I've got Ken Dickensheets with me. Hello, Ken.
Hi, how are you?
Fantastic. And so the reason I wanted to chat with you is because you are really kind of the wizard behind the curtains, pulling the switches and pushing the buttons and everything and making sure things work. So you're kind of the tech guy. I mean, not the one behind the virtual show, but actually physically getting the curtains put up and everything. So.
Well, I'm the pointer in charge. I have a great help, wonderful volunteers.
You're the pointer saying, go do this or that or whatever, but you have the right people. You know the right people, I guess, to
and we,
try to get
we
things
have
done.
Right people and the right equipment, and the right attitude.
And so, what has been one of the biggest challenges? I mean, there have been a lot of challenges day to day. I mean, even this show tonight.
The biggest challenge is always the last minute changes and the last minute surprises. Mm-hmm. And we don't need anything, and then someone gets on stage and they need everything.
Yeah.
So, I think communication is always the biggest challenge. Getting information
in
out.
Every show,
I think a lot of people just take for granted that they're used to doing a little room with a close-up show, and all of a sudden they're in a big room. They don't need anything. They never use it in a little room,
right?
So it's winging the challenges that pop up.
So making a suggestion to other cities that host conventions, what would you recommend? Because it seems like that the tech side of conventions is usually the poorest one. We have poor sound, poor lights, or the kind of cuts in and out. And it's, you know, we're magicians who would think of as being professionals and should know. They know how to perform, but they don't know about the tech side of it. You're the one who kind of keeps the continuity. That's why it's been, I think, a better show technically than a lot of other past conventions, not just TOM's conventions in general.
Well, I think the prevailing attitude forgets that this is all about sight and sound, how it looks, how it sounds. Mm-hmm. And that's what needs to be considered first, not as an afterthought. So it takes careful planning and long-term planning and lots of communication between the various the people who are booking the acts, the people who are performing the acts, the people who are arranging to get on stage, off stage, what happens backstage. There's a dozen people back there making this work.
That's true, and they're all volunteers, and that's part of the issue as well, because usually the convention organizers only have X number of dollars, which is not very much X money to begin with, and so they're trying to do it on the cheap, and so they end up getting what they pay for. But are there tricks of what you might suggest, or how you can get things done so they're still efficient?
I wish.
Yeah, okay. If you want it, it's going to cost you.
A lot of it is experience and having done this before and knowing what makes good sound and good visuals and good lights.
So it's good to have someone with experience to help you with it.
Experience and someone who can explain to those that are being hired. Mm-hmm. For instance, we have to hire a stage to be set up. Mm-hmm. And we have to be very careful on the size of the stage we need, how it's going to fit in the room. Mm-hmm. The planning on this stage layout started over a year ago.
Wow. Okay.
So it's a long-term planning and communication.
And your job and background and title is what?
Well,
in my profession,
I'm an acoustics, noise, and vibration, and audiovisual control consultant, if you will.
So
I design theaters. I design churches. I travel all over the United States.
Yeah. So I'm just saying, for other people who are organizers of other conventions, you need to find a guy like Ken. We are extremely fortunate to have him working with the convention here this year to get things done the way they should be. So if it's possible to get someone who really is an acoustic professional like you.
And it's not my first convention either.
So. Right, that's true.
I've attended many, and we've provided the technical backup for the national convention, IBM in Phoenix, mm-hmm. and TOM a couple of times, and I tell everybody that I do this volunteer to set up a system like this mm-hmm. every few years to remind myself why I don't want to do it for a living
anymore. Yeah, you can retire a little bit as well. You're still doing a lot of work.
But it's fun.
Yeah, it's fun. Ken, thank you very much.
Great
job you've done here, and again, of course,
nice seeing you too.
Good seeing
you,
my friend. This was Magic Word Podcast. That was Ken Dickensheets. Scotty out. All right, so we just finished the evening show, the gala show, and Michael Morris' lecture has just begun, but I thought it'd be kind of interesting to talk with one of the co-hosts in this evening show. We had Brian Brushwood along with Justin Robert Young, in which he's here with us in right now. You go by Justin Robert or JR? Or
Justin
or
Robert.
Just, hey, you.
Yeah, Justin Robert Young. At a certain point in my youth, I realized that there were many, many Justin Youngs. Justin was a very creative name that my mother decided to give me, along with half the other women giving birth in the early 80s. Young is not only short, but also ethnic for African Americans, Koreans, and Mormons. So there's just a wide swath of Youngs, and so I went with Justin Robert Young because it feels like it rolls off the tongue.
And also that if you recognize the voice, it's because you were the voice of the podcast for so many years at the...
Indeed, iTricks.com with the Magic Week in Review podcast, and then we did podcasts for Chris Angel and David Copperfield and Penn & Teller. And obviously, I still do podcasts now, but not in the magic field anymore.
Which one are your specialties then now? What are you podcasting about?
So now, primarily, I do a politics podcast called Politics, Politics, Politics. And then, of course, I do a comedy show with Brian called Great Night.
Okay. And how often does Great Night come on?
Great Night's weekly. So
how many?
Weekly. Okay. Yeah. So every Tuesday. And this is, we've changed the name a few times, but it's always just been the same show of Brian and I. Horsing off.
Is it live?
It is. Yeah. It is.
Kind of like Twitch?
It is. On twitch.tv/nightattack is where it is now, but you can get it at greatnight.tv.
And do you get or ready to record that and do go live over at Brian's compound over in his place?
We do. We had a whole little set. It's great. And I recently just moved to Austin, so we do it live. We do it live every week now, where before we were doing it over the internet.
That's kind of cool. Well, this evening was something in which you had stepped off and done something completely different. Now, this is actually, you said this is your first magic convention, actually? Is that right? I heard you say?
No, yeah. You want to know what? I said that on stage, but I immediately realized that I lied because I've definitely been to I've definitely been to Magic Lives before. But that's a different vibe than this. This is a little bit more of a tighter-knit community. Magic Lives kind of like the entirety of the magic universe and people from out of country and everything, and obviously it has the Vegas kind of feel to it, but this was something really unique. I've always actually heard about TAOM through Brian and friends like Daniel Garcia and, right. and other folks who are here from Texas. And I'm happy that I got to be a part of it.
You don't live in Austin, though, do you?
I just moved here.
Oh, okay. From where were you?
Oakland, California.
Okay. I was thinking that you were somewhere in California. I didn't remember where exactly. Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, okay. I moved to Florida and then Oakland and now Austin.
Okay. Another one of the Californians who had migrated.
We're ruining Austin.
You Californicated
Texas. We all talked together in California. We got a, I got in my hybrid, and there were a couple homeless people in the back, and we're like,
"You don't have enough, so bring
them. Let's go." Yeah, let's ruin this thing. Let's really tank it.
So this evening's show was kind of an improvisational type of an evening, and it worked great, I think. Starting, of course, first of all, Brian was doing his well-known fire eating routine, he had taught my son Nick, and when Nick was, my son was an intern. I don't know if you know that.
I've actually heard of that.
And so anyhow, he was doing his fire eating, and then after that, then he introduced you, and you did this incredible mentalism effect.
So this is an idea that came from the Great Night podcast, where one day I was joking with Brian, and I was joking about the idea of a magician that only set up tricks. Could you do an idea of the all set up magician? And I just love, because although I'm not a magician myself, I've certainly been around magic through the website and being friends with Brian and Andrew Main, and I just enjoy the art of magic anyway, but I love Mendelism's florid, kind of way about it, where like mentalism is a magic art that is slightly different, I think, in presentation than card magic or even kind of like comedy magic, in that like it has to have this air. You have to, like even the people that are not that serious have to have some air of kind of pomposity to them, because. Yeah, because you're reading minds, right? Like, there's something, like, special about it. And so I just had the idea of, like, okay, what if I could just do all of these, like, very mentalism-y kind of unnatural ways of speaking?
Mentalism-y. I like that new word.
Yeah.
Mentalism-y.
And it's like, could I continue to make the things dumber and dumber to the point where people realize that this was a comedy act wrapped up in a magic thing? And then as soon as I came up with the out is really what sold it, which was to have a sealed envelope and then the final reveal be, my name is Justin Robert Young, the all-set-up magician, thank you, good night. That to me is like, okay, well, that's an act, because like that has an end to it. I promised you I was the all-set-up magician. I did all setups. I got out of Dodge, and that was that. And so...
But at the end, whenever that you said, and this envelope has been here the whole time,
yes.
The gasp in the audience,
yes.
No way, no.
Yeah.
They thought that was his comedy up to this point. And then, there's going to be a switch, there's going to be something.
The goal is, and I've never done it for magicians before, I've always done it for lay audiences, and they've liked it because it's a funny comedy thing, but the hope is that it's 99% you think I'm goofing, but then for like, one hot flash, there's 1% of you that's like, oh my god, if this actually is a thing, like,
and it's the best thing I've ever seen.
The best thing ever, and like now I gotta, and knowing magicians, I know immediately, like, the whole brain starts working, because once you've turned off the, like, I'm looking for what he's doing brain, if you're like, for 1 second, you're like, oh my god, do I have to go back and like rethink of everything that he did?
Yeah.
So I'm really, really glad that it came off as well as it did, and it helped this audience. It's very sweet and very very supportive.
It also helped to set up the context for the evening, in which it was more of an improvisational thing of having people line up behind the microphone and tell their own horror stories of something, and which was all completely improvisational. I mean, it could have gone either way, as Brian had said.
Well, that was it. That's another thing that we've done for our comedy show when we do live shows at conventions, is we'll have people tell stories. But that's a little bit more. That's a comedy show, so there's a little bit more of a freewheeling nature that we have to kind of be like direct the like the we could bully the people that are up on on the mic. Really, you can't do that here. I think it should be said for the listeners that the reason why we did this was because there was a cancellation very, very late in the game, and so this was kind of like put together as like a stopgap. But I'm really glad that it came off, and as soon as we started seeing people being really excited to come up and tell their horror stories,
you knew it was going to work.
Yeah, I mean, I think that no matter what, that act is, it's very communal. It is a very, everybody's got a bad, if you're a performer, you've bombed. If you're a performer, you know, you've had things not go right. And right before we went up, we got word that, like, Michael Ammar was really excited to tell an awful story. And we're like, well, hell, like, if Ammar wasn't coming to tell us the awful story, then we're in the money, baby. That's it.
It was hard to beat his story. He had a very good story.
He had an amazing, he had a greatest story ever.
And the ending of the story, yeah, when you see Michael, you have to ask him the story because it's a long setup and the payoff at the end.
The payoff is just otherworldly.
It's like, gold, Jerry, it's gold.
Yeah. It just, you couldn't beat it. Until somebody did beat it because the lady got pooped on by a tiger. But like, but that's the thing, is like you hope, and that's like kismet. Like, that's something that happens randomly. But
yeah.
I thought it was a really, really fun time, and it was a great introduction to TAOM.
But you were already here, and then or did Brian bring you in and say, hey, we're going to do something, and this was what you talked about? Or was it a last minute this afternoon, or were you already here?
I work a lot with Brian just during the week, and so he has been on, very excited to be a part of this TAOM for months now. He's been, like, trying to make sure that all of his crowd knows about it. And so initially, the issue was we were only needed for the online component, and then it turned out we were going to be needed for both the live and the online component. And so we were just trying to think of, like, surefire stuff that we'd done before. I don't know when Brian, I think, suggested to the powers that be the All Set Up Magician, and the All Set Up Magician was something that they thought was good, which again, you know, that you never really know, because magicians, as good-hearted as I believe many of them are, sometimes aren't most well-renowned for their sense of humor, specifically about the art of magic.
Right.
And so, like, I was certainly worried that there's their... My nightmare was I would do it and somebody would be like, why did you make fun of my best friend?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? But thankfully, I think this crowd was just... It was a real hometown crowd, and they love Brian because Brian's
local guy. They've seen him grow up since he was a kid.
Local boy made good.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
And so that I think helped a lot.
You know, I even got a text after it was over from someone who was watching this virtually from home in Michigan. Friend of mine, Harriet Jacobson, had written me and saw it on my watch and said, "Oh, it was hilarious, and I really enjoy the virtual show." It's like, wow, you know, in real time, she's responding.
Here we go, getting it. Well, shout out to you.
So listen, thank you very much. I appreciate it, Justin.
Absolutely.
Robert. This has been great, having an opportunity to actually meet you, because I've heard your voice for so very long.
Oh, I know. Yeah. No, it is. It's awesome. It's awesome to put a face to the voice as well.
Yeah. My pleasure. So, with the Magic Word Podcast, that is Justin Robert Young. Scotty out.